This is Trackside with Kurt Cavan and Kevin Lee.
Good morning, everyone. Greeting you on behalf of the Indianapolis Motor Speedway and thanking you for your attendance.
It is a new track record.
It's a new track record.
I play to the audience, actually, and I got them excited. How do you get them excited? Well, you become excited. One of my favorite days was when Tom Sneva told me that he would do 200 miles an hour the next day. And I said, what? You're kidding me. And he said, no, you watch and I will. And sure enough, I was ready for it. And the very first lap, he got over 200 miles an hour. So what do? You're excited. And he gave me a chance to say, and it's a new
track record.
And then lap number two, still faster. And you won't believe it, you know. And another new track record. That's two track records in the first two laps. Third lap, still higher. Fourth lap, and it's a new all-time speed record. You know, added embellished words. And I got more fun out of it than anybody, but the crowd was really there for that occasion. That's one I remember. I was ready to quit because that was the highlight of my day, my year, my life.
Good to hear Tom Carnegie. We are ready for the 100th Indianapolis 500 at the end of the month, and we are a week away from on-track activity in Indianapolis at the world's greatest race course, on the road course for the Angie's List Grand Prix of Indianapolis in 9 days, the 14th, Saturday afternoon, then the 29th is the 500. Thanks for joining us. Trackside is presented by Verizon 93.5. 1070 The Fan from our downtown Indianapolis studios on Monument Circle. I'm Kevin Lee, along with Kurt Cavan from the Indianapolis Star. David Deering is our studio producer. And our in-studio tweeter tonight is Max Chilton.
Hello, good evening.
Welcome. The Ganassi driver, the rookie, the former Formula One driver, is getting his first taste of Indianapolis and is getting only his second visit to a radio studio. Well, this is big time then, isn't it?
It is. I'm trying to avoid moving on the chair because it's a bit squeaky. So I apologize if you hear a bit of squeakiness.
Yeah, they were new when we moved in 1999 and they haven't been replaced yet. So we're working on that. But the rest of the building is fantastic.
It is. It's got a great view. I'm very happy to be here. So yeah, thank you for having me.
So how are you enjoying the time that you've had in America now for the second year?
It's great. You know, the people are stupidly friendly. You know, they'll do anything to help out. Stupid's the wrong word. I keep using that word. Sorry. Amazingly.
We're
sorry.
Off to a great start.
Yeah, sorry. Amazingly helpful. It blows my mind that everyone's willing to help out. You know, they'll show you the way. My teammates are fantastic at guiding me. And you know, the team are great. And the fans are just, they love it. And we regularly see the same fans at different racetracks around the United States from weekend to weekend. They'll drive all the way there to see us. So it's a great championship to be a part of. I'm really enjoying it. And Chip Ganassi, obviously a great team to come in with, and they're giving me a great car to do the job.
Max Chilton is the driver of the number 8 Gallagher Chip Ganassi Racing Chevrolet. This will be like an edition of This Is Your Life, which is an old television show.
I love that program.
You've heard of it?
Yeah, they had it in the UK.
I was going to say that you've never heard of. But...
Yeah, no, you get this big red book. I used to watch it when I was about 5 or 6, and then they'd bring in their head teacher from when they were like back at primary school. And,
wow.
You know, it's a good program.
I'm guessing Americans don't know it because I think in America it's been gone for 40 years.
Yeah, probably. And so coming through this door is your third grade teacher.
No, I'm just kidding. I'm in trouble.
It's Chip Ganassi, actually.
So we'll go back to how you got started in racing, but I'm going to jump around a little bit. And I'm going to start with, after you had the Formula One experience, you reach the pinnacle of motorsports, you get a couple of seasons, and considering the resources and where you were, I think all would say you did what you could do, and then there's no opportunity, and you decide to come to America to race in Indy Lights, not even the top American open wheel racing series. What was the reaction from your friends, your family, the people you knew in the Formula One world that you were coming to America, and it wasn't an IndyCar, it was the step below?
It was obviously a big change, but the way it sort of came about wasn't like a sudden announcement. So
That's
it wasn't
right.
like a big shock. It was, you know, sadly the Marussia team went under, and you know, soon after Jules's accident. And so we had a really difficult winter of 2014. I didn't really know where I was going. I knew F1 was pretty much off the cards for the following year. And I wanted to keep racing. Racing drivers, it's really important to, you know, to be racing something at least, instead of just being a reserve driver, not doing much. So Trevor Carlin mentioned that, you know, Carlin was starting an Indy Lights team in America, and they needed someone to test their second car because they'd already signed Ed Jones. So I said, yeah, of course, I'll help out. The first test was an oval at Homestead, and so that was a big shock to the system. I never experienced anything like it. And in Formula One, the cars are very, very, very strong in the corners. They've got a huge amount of downforce, but you never experience the G-force as you do on an oval. Because yeah, we'd pull 4 or 5 G, but only for like a split second in a corner. This was like a continuous G-force for up to 4 or 5 seconds. So, and that was an Indy Lights car. So I really enjoyed it. It was, yeah, as I said, it was a big shock to the system. And we then went on to a few different road courses. And they said, well, we do the first race. So I did the first race, and it all sort of led on to each other. But at the same time, I got contacted by Nissan to be the works driver in LMP1. And that was really exciting for me, because I managed to do an LMP1 race with my brother at Silverstone when I was only 16 years old. And we just missed out on the podium. And everyone always said to me when I was in F1, what would you do after? And I always said I'd do LMP1, because a lot of people said it would suit my style. Like I'm good at, you know, trying to finish, well, consistently finishing, touch wood. And I'm a good person to have in a team. So that really appealed to me. So I didn't turn that down and I jumped at it. But we soon realized that project was a bit of a, let's say, difficult one. And we did get to Le Mans, to be fair to them. And the guys, I've never seen guys work as hard as they did. You know, they were working round the clock to get that car working. But there's a famous saying, I can't say it on air, but yeah, it was like trying to polish something and it was never going to work. So we then carried on doing the Indy Lights season. I missed 3 races because I was doing the LMP1 project, so I didn't have a chance at going for the Lights title. But I got to meet a lot of people who I'm now working with this year. And I got to understand the American way. And, you know, if you'd asked me 2 years, I'd be doing IndyCar, I would have said, no, probably not. But, you know, it's amazing what happens in life. Mm-hmm. Never say never. Never say you're not going to do something, because you just don't know what's around the corner.
And not only did you come get a shock to the system. Yeah, the squeaky chair. I don't think that picks up too much on the mic. So you're good
mostly
for that.
Just in here, yeah.
Okay. We can blame that on Kevin. But not only a shock to the system, but you won an oval race. I mean, I remember, I think we even talked about it. We were like, holy, you know what?
Yeah.
The guy with F1 experience wins a Lights.
You'd probably win a race, but that's not the
there.
One we were thinking
yeah,
of.
Yeah, you were thinking on the same wavelength that I was, and probably everyone was. And it, weirdly enough, this year is the same. I've been strong and we've had some bad luck, but my best result this year was my first ever short oval in an IndyCar at Phoenix this year. We finished 7th. So it seems to be doing what I did last year, and I seem to be a little bit stronger on the ovals than I do on the other circuits. But I think we have had a bit of bad luck, and I'm really looking forward to the month of May of experience a super speedway.
How did doing the season of Indy Lights prepare you? Would you have been this far along if you had just come straight over to do IndyCar?
I personally think I wouldn't have been. And that's why it wasn't an easy decision saying I would do Indy Lights, because it was a big jump down from where I'd
been. I give
you
a lot of respect for moving your ego out of the way and saying, this is what I need.
I knew that IndyCar racing on ovals was not easy. Yeah. And I'd seen people come from GP2 and go into it and struggled, I personally thought, on ovals. And so I thought, you know, who am I to say it's easy and go straight into IndyCar? I thought it was a wise move, and I still stand by that. And I think it was the right decision. I managed to get a win, so I understood how it worked. And I'm still going to learn a lot this year. There's still a lot for me to learn. I've never driven an IndyCar around Indianapolis, and I'm racing the 100th running of the 500. So, you know, I'm going to have to be like a sponge this month and just suck up everything I can. But I definitely think that was the right decision, because they used to do it back in the day. You'd have F1 drivers race F2 and the following weekend race F1. You know, I think, as I said earlier, it's important to keep racing. And last year, at the time I agreed to do the Lights, I hadn't had anything signed at that point with Nissan. So it was a good move.
How many guys have you talked to or are you aware of that their goal was Formula One? Some may have made it. Some didn't get nearly as far and have an opportunity like you. And then they come over and experience America and experience a series where more people have an opportunity to win and soon say, you know what? I'd rather race here and have a chance than go back there and race for 12th.
Yeah, completely. My 2 years in F1 were amazing, and I'm going to remember it for the rest of my life, and it made me partly who I am, and I learned a lot, met some great people. But there were days where I'd beat my teammate, I'd finish like 13th, and to me that was like, you couldn't have done any better. I drove the wheels off the car to get that result. And yeah, the feeling's still good because you beat your teammate, you beat the cars, you're sort of competing around like the Caterhams, for example. But you're not standing on the podium. You're not collecting points in the championship. Spraying the champagne. So that's why I liked the idea of coming over here, because if you work hard, you can get success, and you don't necessarily need to be in the best car in IndyCar. It seems to be quite mixed up. I think you do need a bit of luck if you're in a car which isn't so strong. But the way the yellows work with the safety cars over here, it does stir up results, and so it gives different people opportunities, and I'm really enjoying my chances over here.
Max Chilton is joining us, rookie for Chip Ganassi Racing, getting set to run in his first Indianapolis 500. So he will have done Monaco and Formula One, Le Mans, and now the Indianapolis 500. So ask Chip for a car in the Daytona 500, and you've done it all.
Yeah, exactly. I've been very fortunate to have a go, in my opinion, the three biggest races in the world, and that is Monaco Grand Prix, Le Mans 24 Hours, and this year will be the Indianapolis 500. So, yeah, really, really lucky. The atmosphere looks like it's going to be electric. It seems to always be electric, but the 100's running, they've sold out the tickets. And to be honest, it always clashes with the Monaco Grand Prix. So when I left karting, my focus was Formula One, and half the time I was actually at the Monaco Grand Prix, the Racing GP2, World Series, or Formula One. So I never got to pay much attention to the 500 apart from seeing the results. So I've never actually watched the 500 the whole way through. So the first Indianapolis 500 experience for me this year and watching the whole race will be from the cockpit of a car.
Wow. So I was going to ask, if you didn't stay last year. You were here for the Freedom 100, and then unfortunately you didn't get to do that because you had a mechanical on the grid. So you've still not raced a lap, you practiced.
Yeah, I've practiced a lap, and that was the other surprising thing about last year. Because I was traveling between here, London and France for Le Mans, I actually missed a lot of the oval testing. So I actually had like a 45-minute practice straight into qualifying and then had to race. So to come away last year with a race win on an oval wasn't expected. Hopefully this year I can, learn from, I've got Dario on my pit wall this year. He'll give me all the advice I need. I've got Scott, TK, even Charlie's been doing it 6 years. He's still very experienced. I think I've got a good chance of trying to be, mid-grid or rookie of the year.
I'm curious, just to tie up previous experience versus current experience, the concentration level that's required at Phoenix, for example, in an IndyCar race, compared to all the class cars at Le Mans when you're at, I don't know if you ran the night segment, but is it a different level of concentration?
It is. The thing which makes it slightly easier in IndyCar is you have a spotter. So you focus purely on what's ahead of you. And because you've got someone guiding you through it, you're purely concentrating on where you're going. And it is difficult. And it is, I think, probably more challenging than Le Mans. But the problem with Le Mans, it's a longer duration. Even though you've slept before, maybe 4 or 5 hours before your night stint at Le Mans, you're still pretty in a sleepy mode, and you're doing 220 miles an hour down the backstroke with Porsche 911s doing half the speed of you. You've got Porsche and Audis flying past you, and so it's a different type of concentration. But whatever you're racing, whether it's motocross bikes, motorbikes, Le Mans cars, F1, IndyCar, you just have to focus purely on what's in front of you and give 100% focus. And if you do that, you tend to come away with a good result.
So as a spotter, like your backseat driver is a little bit, at some point you just wish they would kind of go quiet?
Yeah, so the people that have been doing it a long time, like TK and Scott, I think they sometimes tell their spotters to, politely quieten down. And and I think they understand more of what's going on because they've done it. So for me, it's still a big shock on an oval race. There's a lot going on, so I'm relying on him maybe more than people with experience. But I like that. I've never had a problem with someone talking to me mid-corner doing 200 miles an hour. It's like having a radio on in a car, and they're there to help you. So I'm personally never going to tell my spotter to quieten down unless he's left the button on and is actually talking about what beers he's going to have tonight or whatever.
Oh, good. Let's be sure to call him. Let's ring him up on his cell phone while he's mid-corner.
Max Chilton is in studio with us tonight, rookie for Chip Ganassi Racing. More to come. We'll find out how he got to Formula One. We've talked about how he ultimately got to America, but how he got into racing and your questions, if you like, for Max at KevinLee23 on Twitter. It's Trackside, presented by Verizon, 93.5 1070 The Fan.
This is Will Power, and you're listening to Trackside with Kurt Cavan and Kevin Lee on 1070 The Fan.
Go inside Indy with IndyCar Mobile. Listen to team radio feeds, watch live in-car cameras and more, only on your phone, only on Verizon. Data usage applies, available on select devices. IndyCar Mobile app also featuring Trackside on the podcast page. I'm Kevin Lee. Kurt Cavan is here. This is 93.5, 1070 The Fan. Max Chilton, the Gallagher car for Chip Ganassi Racing, the number 8 Chevrolet, as he gets set for his first Indianapolis 500, is in studio. So you grew up how far from London?
So I grew up on, I guess there's a, you call them highway, I call them motorways, which rings mm-hmm. Indianapolis. We have one of those that goes around the whole of London, which is called the M25. And we live probably 4 or 5 miles south of that in the countryside. I've lived there my whole life. I went to school around there. And to me, it's home. I can't go anywhere else in the UK and feel like I'm at home. So I really enjoy flying back there after most races. That's where I brought up.
How did you get started in racing? How old were you? What were you doing?
How I first remember motorsport was watching a famous red car go round and round every Sunday and win, and that was Michael Schumacher, and listening to Murray Walker do the commentary. I just remember that from the age of maybe 5 or 6. But the time I actually started racing was my brother was about 14 doing a thing called T-Cars, which is like a mini touring car which you could race at that age. And I couldn't race anything at that age car-wise. And so I'd go around the paddock on my scooter, smelling the fumes and watching these cars go around. And the only thing I could have a go on was a go-kart. So I got into that like a lot of people in motorsport did at the age of, I think, 8 or 9, which actually is quite late. A lot of people I raced against were doing these little things called Bambino carts at the age of 6 or 7. Wow. I did that. Loved it, did the little local championship, then did national championships, then did European championships. And it's sort of like a drug. It's addictive. You win and then you want to go up to the next class. And I loved karting, but to me it was to learn a racecraft. And I learned that and I got out of it pretty quickly and got into cars with downforce to understand it. And I've seen people who are world karting champions who are amazing karters, but then they've come into downforce cars and struggled. So to me, it's not the be all and end all. And so I wanted to get out after I learned my racecraft and start the ladder to Formula One.
And I've heard it can go the other way too. There were guys that were maybe just a little above average at karting, but a car fit their style better. How old were you when you started car racing?
So I was pretty young. I started testing at 13, oh, but wow. I had a race license at 14. And everything I've done, I've always tended to be younger. Max Verstappen has smashed everyone out of the water, but I was the youngest person to hold
the super license?
Yeah. No, not super license. The local license, motorsport license. At 14 you had to be. Then I was the youngest person to ever race F3 because I raced on my 16th birthday and I qualified when I was 15. Then I jumped into GP2 pretty young. And F1, I was 21. I wasn't I think I was the youngest at the time, actually. As I said, Max Verstappen has smashed me out of the water. So it was a quick ladder. I did 3 years of British F3, 3 years of GP2, and lucky enough to have 2 years in Formula One.
Let's first point out that you didn't just arrive here tonight. You came bearing gifts. And in true European fashion, you brought coffee at 7:30 local time, which will keep me up most of the night, but that's okay. I appreciate the thought, and gifts should come for future guests. They should know that. But what I wanted to ask you is one of the things that's always interesting to me about this global sport of racing is people that you've come across in the past who are now here, who have you seen from this paddock? Where have you seen them before? And, you know, maybe there isn't many in your case, but I'm surprised always that people have come across each other at different places.
Yeah, definitely. So I guess the first one that springs to mind is Conor Daly. From what I remember, I've never actually raced against him, but when he started doing GP3 on the F1 bill, I was doing GP2, and he was racing for a team of mine, Carlin, in GP3 at the time. So we got to know each other then. Alexander Rossi, I raced against that in GP2, and he was the reserve driver at Marussia when I was there. Luca Filippi, he qualified on pole at Singapore, my last ever GP2 race. I got him off the line and I won the race there. So I've raced him a few times. He's a lovely guy. And then there probably is a few other people I've met. Obviously, I've known Dario because he's a huge star in our country. And, you know, he was always on the stage at the award ceremonies where I was sat on the table sort of looking at my heroes. And it's weird to have him now working with me. But there's definitely a few people around. And it's a great, as I said, everyone's amazingly friendly. They're willing to help out. And it's just a great atmosphere to be off.
Let's talk about that, how you came in contact when you got to the States, and how Dario's the one who really kind of became a mentor of sorts. How did that happen?
How did it happen? It sort of just happened. But obviously last year he was around helping Ganassi. I was racing lights for Carlin, and we met up just at the track. I think he gave me my number and he said, look, if you need any help with, you know, experience at tracks, struggling with lines, whatever, mainly on ovals, because I was...
And you raised
I
your
had
hand.
No clue. And yeah, I you know, jumped at the chance for that. And so he was occasionally messaging me tips and bits of advice. And so we got to know each other that way. He said then at the end of the year, there was an opportunity I might be able to do the rookie test for Ganassi at Sonoma, but that didn't happen. And then we just kept in contact. And I got contacted by pretty much every team after my win at Iowa. About what my plans were for the following season, and it came down to two teams pretty quickly. But there was one team obviously I wanted to be with, and we managed to get that deal done with Ganassi, and that's obviously where Dario has been for a long time and still helps out. So he's now on my stand because I'm the one with least experience, and he's just trying to get me up to speed. And so yeah, that's how it came about. But it was no more than that.
What's the perception of IndyCar and the Indianapolis 500 first? Back home as a kid, how much were you paying attention? And then in the Formula One paddock?
Everyone understands in Formula One that IndyCar is full of very, very talented professional drivers, people that have done it for a long time. And the Indianapolis 500 is, you know, whether you're in motorsport in another part of the world, it's one of those iconic races. The thing I would say, in Europe, they don't fully understand the oval scene, and I didn't understand it until I've driven it. You don't understand the speed, you don't understand the skill. I used to watch sometimes oval racing and think, what is there to it? But until you've actually driven it, you don't understand. And so I think, you know, part of it is just the way we're brought up. Americans are brought up more on ovals than not, and we're completely opposite from where I'm from. So it was definitely followed, but not hugely watched, I would say. But now with social media, watching things online, it's becoming more popular. And I think this year, you know, Formula One is a little bit dull at times. I think they will definitely all be watching it after the race in Monaco. And yeah, it's great to have a chance.
So that's an evening event that would be... probably around 7 o'clock or so.
So yeah, it's a.
I don't know what the time would be in Monaco.
So Monaco would be 6 hours from behind here, and the race starts at 10. What is it? 12 here.
Yeah.
So at 6:20, so the race will be over in Monaco. Everyone's probably in their bedrooms getting dressed, ready to go for a fun night at Monaco. So yeah, it should be plenty of people watching it.
How's the adjustment been? You know, we think about the racing and everything, but. You know, your life is somewhat uprooted. You're kind of living out of a suitcase.
Yep.
And but who do you hang out with? What do you do?
You know, I hang out with my team. It's a very busy schedule. There's a lot of races fitted into quite a short season.
Yeah.
So
we're aware of that.
Yeah,
that's kind of a topic.
And sometimes there are gaps that you don't really like.
But I'm a fan for it because it gives everyone a proper winter. That's the thing with Formula One. You don't get a winter. Like they finish in late November. They've got to then design a new car every year. So then the shop building it.
Yeah.
And then by the end of January, they're testing. So they don't ever get a time off. At least in IndyCar, you get a chance to let your hair down in the winter. So I'm a fan of it. It definitely means I'm collecting the air miles, flying a lot. I think this trip out here was my 37th crossing of the Atlantic in the last 18 months. So I'm getting to know the inside of a plane a lot. But I'm enjoying my time over here. Chloe, my now fiance, she just recently became my fiance, is coming out to pretty much every race, if not all of them, I think. And she missed Phoenix because she was ill. So she's with me. And it's nice to travel around with someone. Otherwise, it does get a bit lonely. But there's not a huge amount of days where I'm not with a team. They might, we might race on a Sunday, not see them for 2 days, but then I'll see them at track on the Wednesday or Thursday. So yeah, it's good. It's good to have someone travel with me.
Well, congratulations. Your fiance from London, back home?
Yeah. So I've known her. I have an image of her in my head when I was five. We met when we were five or six. And we've always lived in the same town. I've been friends with her since we sort of first met again when we were 14. And I managed to make her my girlfriend when I was, when was I? I think I was six. I was 17. She was 15. And we've been together for the last 7.5 years. So yeah, it's great to have, as I say, my best friend traveling with me.
Very nice. Very nice.
That's a great story.
Yeah.
Forget all the other stuff.
Yeah, it's all good. Now, let's get to the important stuff. I hear you have a burger bash on the carb day.
Really?
Yeah, half the reason I bought your coffee, is so you can invite me along to your burger bash.
Were you put up to this?
Well, maybe.
this is our ninth year.
You are more than welcome.
Good.
In fact, you'd be a featured guest.
You're encouraged to come.
You could be a 10-minute stop. Yeah. And we're expecting a big crowd right around the corner on the big plaza. Where...
Oh, so it's not the Speedway?
No, it's not the Speedway. Cool.
Do we have to bring our own meat?
No.
Okay, it's all prepared for.
Everything will be done for you.
I like the sound of this.
Your appearance fee is a burger and a shake.
Oh, a shake. Yeah, chocolate shake?
You can have whatever flavor.
I'll be there.
Graham has actually created his own milkshake, which has M&Ms in it and various components.
I'm all for the M&Ms. I'm not a big fan of these Oreo stuff. So, yeah, I'll take the M&M.
M&Ms, that's good. So if you have your own design, we can work on the Max Chilton design. I'm more curious. You have your Twitter handle, for example, is capital M, capital A, capital X. Is that just because you're bigger than life?
I don't know why that
came about. Or does it stand for
about.
Something? Or you can't type?
The Twitter handle is just Max Chilton, but when you go on my profile,
let's hit that up here.
Max is the main name, and it's a cool
name,
right. I think. It's nice and short, so I decided to make it a little bit bigger and stand out, I guess.
And it's space, too. It's not just capital M-A-X, it's M space A space X.
Yeah, Max Power. There we go.
I like it.
Oh, is that what it stands for?
Well, I don't know. Well, it makes me sound like I'm Will Power's son, so let's not go down that.
No, let's don't do that. Did you know there was a fake Will Power on Twitter?
There's a stage about 2 years ago where everyone had a fake, but then
did you get one?
I did have one, but then it seems to have closed down.
Was he funny?
They weren't bad actually. Yeah. There was quite a few in F1 where everyone seemed to have their own fake one, and occasionally if it was a good funny one, you would retweet your fake one. So yeah.
But it's always the picture of the real person, and it, like when faux Will Power tweets me something, it says Will Power. And I think, well, that's odd that Will is asking me that question. And I look at, that's not Will Power.
You know, that is his name.
What
Will Power. That is his name.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you know what his fiance's maiden name was?
No.
Cannon. So she was Liz Cannon Power.
Wow.
Yeah. I'm just trying to give you local knowledge.
Okay, thank you.
So
that's my book.
We'll have more insight for Max as we continue, and he'll share some stories for us. Anything for him? We will get to a couple of Twitter questions for Max coming up at Kevin Lee 23. Trackside 93.5, 1070 The Fan.
This is Ed Carpenter, and you're listening to Trackside with Kurt Cavan and Kevin Lee on 1070 The Fan.
If you live in the Indianapolis area and you are a motorsport fan, you likely know of Fast Times. If you're coming in from out of town, have a little downtime, head up to the north side of Indianapolis for the new look and feel at Fast Times. New carts plus junior carts, a two-seater as well. Private events are available, and if you book before the end of this month, you'll save 15%. It's a bi-level track, no better time than right now to get to Fast Times, 96th and Keystone, next to Woodland Bowl, online at ftik.com. And you might see someone like Max Chilton up there. Have you been up there yet?
I'm lost by what you just said.
It's an indoor karting center.
Wow.
Indoor
you guys
karting.
Love adverts over it. It's unbelievable.
We do. Well, that's how we get our $25 a night.
Oh, I see.
Without doing those.
I see.
It's high.
We don't get that much.
Karting, I'll be there for sure. Yeah,
lot of the IndyCar guys come out there and spend a lot of time and have fun. It's not an outdoor kart. It's not like a tag kart that'll go 90 miles an hour, but they feel pretty good.
Cool.
They're good.
Yeah, I'm all game for
a
karting.
Can you shoot a basket? Can you shoot a basketball?
I think anyone can, but depending on how good it is. Yeah.
Tony Stewart was as bad as they come.
well, I'll probably be on his level. It's not really one of those sports that we played. And we did have an American star come over to my school, actually. And he was the other end of the sports hall, and he'd keep getting in from absolutely miles away. And I thought, there's no chance of me ever doing that. So I stuck with rugby, a good old English sport.
Did you play soccer as a kid?
I played football, yeah.
Football. I'm sorry. Yeah. Well, I wanted people to understand. If I say, did you play football? And you say yes, wow.
Yeah, wow. No. So I played.
But you did say you watched the Super Bowl this year for the first time,
right? I did. I was in, I was testing in Sonoma. And I had a couple of days off, and that was, I think we're testing on the Tuesday, and it was the Sunday when the Super Bowl was. So I was in the right part of the world. You know, San Fran was where it was based, and yeah. I did enjoy it. I just, the adverts got to me, but I guess sport wouldn't be so good over here without the adverts. So yeah, I'll stop criticizing the adverts.
Well, here in America, the commercials, the adverts in the Super Bowl are as big as the game. Everybody brings out their big marketing platform and they pay, what is it? $4.5 million for a 30-second commercial. Yeah.
I do enjoy the big adverts on the Super Bowl because you're always guessing what it's going to be. And also the performance is amazing. This year it was amazing to see Coldplay up there doing an amazing job.
Two Twitter questions for IndyCar driver with Ganassi, Max Chilton. Alex Kane 33 says, welcome. Looking forward to meeting you later on in the month. At WF1G says there are 30 people from your hometown in Reigate coming to watch you at the Indy 500.
Really?
Let's see what his name is.
You probably know him.
He doesn't have a name. It just says WF1G. Wow. Oh, it's Bernie Ecclestone. There's his picture. Yeah. Maybe that's
maybe
him.
Bernie's
there.
Coming out.
Maybe
to
that's
watch.
Him there with
oh,
Bernie.
John Todd.
that's John Todd. Yeah, that's not him either. I guess I don't know what John Todd looks like.
I'm all
he's
for
very short.
People coming to support me. I have to try and meet
You're
up
right,
with
he
him.
Is very short because he's the same height as Bernie.
Yeah, Bernie's a little man with a big ego.
How many friends and family do you have coming to the race?
I have my parents, my sister and her husband, my fiance, a couple of close family friends. So no more than 10 people, but I think we can add that to the 30 in class. It is 40 people coming to support. So that's an amazing turnout.
And they're not all staying on your bus.
Nope. They can find their own way.
IndyCar 500. How much better are the Firestone Racing tires over the Spaghetti Pirellis?
They're pretty good tires, these Firestone. I'm really enjoying them. And the red tire is amazing. The one downside is it doesn't particularly help with rookies. We're going into qualifying completely blind.
Yeah.
And ideally, you don't want to take two reds because then you haven't got a set that when you need them further down the weekend. So I'd say that's the one downside to it, but that's not Firestone's issue. That's just the way that the rules are. But it's an amazing tire. It's consistent, and I think the degradation is good to create some good racing.
Stephen V. King, what kind of prep has Max done to best prepare himself for May 16th and his first laps at Indy?
The oval, as he's talking
the
about.
The oval. Well, you can't do simulators on ovals. It just doesn't work. So at least I've driven the track in a lights car doing 200 miles an hour. So I sort of understand the lines you sort of need to take, but there's not much more else you can do to be prepared apart from watching previous races back, which I'll do after this weekend comes up with the GP. And just learn as much as I can. Obviously, I've got, as I said earlier, I've got amazing teammates. I've got Dario. And just take bits of advice from everywhere, but there's not much else you can do with preparation.
Christopher at Hockey Cayman, what is the BTCC's equivalent to the Indy 500 as to its signature race events?
British Touring Car Championship. That was it's an amazing championship. That's where my brother did it for 10 years. He's now doing. He's in his fourth year of the World Touring Car Championship. But the racing, I think the BTCC is one of the best weekends you could go to. They have three races a weekend. Great for the fans, they can get around all the drivers. Their equivalent of the Indy 500 is probably the last race at Branch Hatch every year. Mm. The title is never decided until the third race of that weekend. You don't know what way it's going to go. There's also always a bit of door banging, always a bit of confrontation between the drivers. So I'd say the Branch Hatch last round of the year for the BTCC.
Paul at Field of 33 says, still can't believe how much Max sounds like Dan Weldon, both with accent and tone of voice. Did you have, you mentioned Schumacher, who were your heroes when you were a kid? Who were the guys that you looked up to that you really followed?
I think Michael was the first. I then, when I started to really actually get into motorsport, it was Jensen. Jensen got into Formula One pretty young, straight from Formula 3, where British Formula 3, where mm-hmm. I came from. And I like the way he thought. He thinks outside the box. I like to think I come from that sort of same wavelength. It's important to sometimes think of things that other people don't think of, because you can make a jump on them. And it's weird that people say I sound like Dan, because I went out, I had dinner with Holly in St. Pete with Dario and a few of his friends, and they're all saying I sounded just like Dan. So yeah, it's a little bit weird, but I think it's more just the British accent.
We don't hear a lot of them, but but you don't sound like the Geico.
He doesn't know what that is, I bet.
The Geico Gecko. Dan sounded more like the Geico Gecko.
Okay.
So
it's an advert.
I've seen the Gecko and the Geico, because we actually have that a bit in the UK now. So
you don't really have that sound. I do see the similarity to Dan.
Yeah.
But you know, Dan also sounded like a character that was on one of the kids' radio shows my kids listened to. It was a British chipmunk.
Oh.
I told him that.
I bet he loved you for that.
You know, he's a good sport. He's a good sport.
He was always a good sport.
Yeah, yeah.
By the way, we've been saying you were going to be a good guest, and you're hanging in there.
I have a tweet here. Cool. That says from Michael Carney that Max is the best guest you've ever had. How about that?
Wow. I need to buy that guy a beer. Yeah, thank you.
You need to buy us a beer. The heck with him.
Well, I bought you a coffee, and no one's drinking them. So
I am.
Yeah.
I'm half gone.
I want to ask you more of a serious question. One of the topics in Formula One, we saw Red Bull bring out the partial canopy and the shields, and I'm really fascinated with this. I am one that, yeah, I like the look of an open cockpit car, but I'm tired of seeing people I know get hurt and worse. So I can deal with the aesthetics if they can get past the other issues that could potentially come with it and maybe doesn't make it feasible. How do you feel about that?
I'm completely on the same wavelength as you. They don't naturally look as attractive, but at the end of the day, it's about safety. And yes, motorsport is dangerous, and it always is going to be dangerous, no matter what we do to the cars. Doing 240 miles an hour average speed, or even on a street circuit doing 180 miles an hour, there's no way you can ever make that safe. But to me, when there's an issue with safety, and it can be addressed to help driver safety, I don't see why you wouldn't want that. And there are fans that say, oh, it's fun seeing you know, dangerous racing. Yeah, I agree, sometimes seeing a crash here and there is a bit of fun, but you don't want to ever see someone crash and get hurt. And so there's still going to be accidents of making it a closed cockpit, but it just makes it overall safer. And I agree, there's not been no one's come up with the right idea yet. Things take time to come up with them. I think the Red Bull one was better than the Ferrari Halo design. And I agree it shouldn't be completely closed cockpits, because if you go over or if the thing catches fire and you can't get out, that's a lot bigger risks. But I'm sure with all these amazing engineers, designers, and motorsport's a big industry, in the next few years we will come up with a solution, and that will still then be adapted. But if people say it looks weird, I think it looks weird when, you know, Fangio, you know, when they were wearing goggles, the first person to wear a closed cockpit or a closed face helmet, it would have looked funny. But people adjust to it. I remember when someone started wearing a hands device, you thought, oh, that looks just bizarre. Mm-hmm. But you don't even see it now.
They
you
didn't
see
want
past
to wear seatbelts back in the day.
Yeah. And I think if we come up with the right idea, I don't think it is ugly. I think the wet cars out there, like the Audi and the Porsche, I think they're some of the nicest looking racing cars we have on the planet. And they're closed cockpit. So there's definitely a solution. And I've said what I thought of this at the start of the year. I sort of got criticized a little bit for what I said, so I have to be a bit careful. But I think it's important drivers say what they think. I don't think we should be standing around saying, oh, we can't say that, because, you know, well, you know, at the end of the day, we're the ones putting our lives on the line. And I strongly think that we need to address it along with a lot of other people. So, you know, I'm not going to back down. I know lots of other drivers think what I think. Sometimes they might not say what I think. But, yeah, it's definitely the way forward.
It's good to have you in. It was good to get to know you a little bit better. I've only spent a few minutes with you, Kurt, maybe a little bit more. That's what I said last night. I think once people get to hear Max in a little longer format, it's not a soundbite, it's not a quote in a newspaper. You did good work tonight.
Thank you very much.
We look forward to seeing you at Indianapolis on the Oval for the first time in a couple of weeks, and then in the Angeles Grand Prix in a week and a half. Max Chilton, the number 8 Gallagher car for Ganassi Racing, the Chevrolet. He'll be in his first Indianapolis 500 at the end of the month. We'll hit the news of the day. There's another report about Boston and a replacement, and a quote from Mark Miles that sounds very encouraging. We'll get to that coming up in a moment. Trackside, 93.5, 1070, The Fan.
This is Edu Castroneves. You are listening to Trackside with Kirk Kevin and Kevin Lee on 1070, The Fan.
Experience every pass, pit, blip, and checkered flag on your phone. Download IndyCar Mobile from Verizon to go inside IndyCar all season. Data usage applies, available on select devices. Trackside, 93.5, 1070 The Fan, presented by Verizon. Great to have Max Chilton in studio with us tonight. He's now been introduced to Donald Davidson. And in 10 years, Donald will be able to tell every start and finishing position of Max's career. It'll be easy after this year, but we're going to make Donald challenging. So you're committed to at least 10 years of the Indianapolis 500. And he got to meet Uncle Bobby Unser today, too.
It was amazing.
So good stuff. All right, we've got some news. Thanks, Max. We'll see you soon. News from today, there's a report out of Autosports about the Boston race. So this continues to be a developing situation, and I'll click over and try to find the actual quotes from that. But Mark Miles was quoted as saying he is very confident, in quotes, that there will be a replacement in the coming days.
Well, let's hope so. As we've said, the most likely, or one of the most likely choices, is Gateway Motorsports Park, where they have an oval that IndyCar has been looking at. Ed Carpenter has tested that, and they would like to have it on the schedule for 2017. Obviously, one of the issues there is they have an NHRA race just 3 weeks after the proposed date. As we talked about, I think, last night and the night before, Watkins Glen is a logical place. Now, Michael Prentup, the track president there, went into a lengthy discussion with me about, this is not very doable for us, but as we pointed out last night, if the money's right, I mean, they could probably make anything work. And I think that's kind of the case with a lot of people. If the money is right, and I just don't know how much IndyCar has to spend on this. So I guess we'll wait and see.
And it could be a point where they've decided we just have to bite the bullet and take a financial loss here to avoid a further black mark of having that big of an opening in our schedule. Both of these venues would be ones that would be well-received. I'm not going to say that they're going to be financial successes, but within the fan base, either one of these would be well-received, and maybe there's enough push to make it at least look decent. To get a little bit of a crowd there. It's going to be harder from the financial standpoint. I don't know if any of these sponsors can be transferred over from the Boston group.
I don't think so.
Yeah, my guess is this is just an IndyCar venture at this point. Some quotes in the Autosport story regarding Watkins Glen. First starting with Gateway, things that we've talked about before, that we've been having conversations with them. If we looked at that as a possible replacement for Labor Day weekend this year, we'd want to make sure they have ample time to do it right. You only get one chance to make a first impression. That consideration will be foremost in our mind of possibilities. It's much more likely an existing circuit with an existing staff and a fan base that can do it right. I think I've seen other stories that he has ruled out any kind of a street course situation.
Well, I said we said this the last two nights. Yeah. It's just 4 months is... You have enough logistical hurdles with getting people in the door and first attracting them and getting them in the door and selling tickets. And unless you're just going to let everybody in for free, you've got some real hurdles. Getting the track ready, that's not doable.
On Watkins Glen, the track president, Michael Prentup, I did not know this, visited Phoenix to assess.
I didn't know either. He didn't say that.
Whether to invite the series back to his track. Miles said Michael has checked in with us annually the last few years to check the level of interest. That was probably not reciprocated by us because we didn't see a great opportunity. That's interesting. That's been one of the places where I would hope they would go back. But what Mark could be talking about is he knows what type of financial situation needs to happen to make this work, and they're not willing to do that. And or what time of year is available from previous conversations, and they just don't have that opening.
at this point. Miles ruled out three other possibilities: a return to Laguna Seca. We've talked about why that cannot happen with the proximity to Sonoma, or Fontana, or a new street race in Providence. As for Fontana, no, for the same reasons it came off the schedule. Same thing we said. And keep in mind, you know, I am intrigued a little bit about if you could work out the finances to do it at night. But the problem there is, to make it a nighttime race starting at 8 o'clock, you're running at 11 o'clock Eastern. Here's where I think you have to look at any type of race you're going to do. Preferably both of these scenarios, but you have to have at least one: a big crowd with a lot of sponsors involved and so forth. So maybe three: a big crowd, great sponsor support, and good TV ratings. If you can get all three, you've ticked them all, but you've at least got to have one or two of those. Well, the problem with Fontana is you're going to go 0-for-3 with a short opportunity to get it going. It's not going to be supportive of sponsors. It's not going to have a good crowd in this circumstance. And an 11 p.m. Eastern race is not going to have a good television rating.
0-for-3, you're right.
So the only way would be to run it in the heat at 4 o'clock local time. And then you might be able to get a good TV audience like they did last summer in June, but not a good crowd. So that's really the only way you could do it, is to tell the track president, we're sorry, we don't care if anybody comes, and then you're going to have to rent the track. So that would be, I don't think you totally cross that one off. You could consider doing that. It shouldn't be as hot as it was in June, but it's going to be hot.
Well, they're not
Labor Day weekend.
They're not doing it. They're not doing it. For all the, as Mark said in that story, for all the reasons why it's not there in the first place. And the other is, you have to exponentially increase the crash damage to the budgets of the teams. You just do. They're going to have to count on more. If you end up at Gateway, it's a shorter oval, but there's still some extra expense. And if you're at Watkins Glen, you factor that back just a throttle or two.
For Laguna Seca, he said, we've looked at both ends of the calendar for that and have not found an opportunity. They've been thinking about it, but you know, it more likely needs to be the early portion of the season because of Sonoma. Now, this story I saw at around 6 o'clock from the Boston Herald. Here's another one out of left field, and this is obviously the promoters are trying to save their money. They've done all this work, and they're not only going to lose the opportunity to make money, they are going to be on the hook for a lot of money owed, the things they've already bought. If there's a penalty with IndyCar, the Boston Herald reported that a location, Suffolk Downs, was a last-ditch attempt by the promoter. Mark Miles said no to this. No. We've gone down this path with you before. We are not following you anymore. And there was a joint statement between the two that was interesting, that said, while it's disappointing that IndyCar will not race in Boston this year, we look forward to continuing our work together to bring IndyCar to Boston in the future. The promoter, the mayor.
That's the mayor.
The mayor, Walsh, and Miles said in a joint statement, Boston has always been a great partner for IndyCar, and we are confident with a strong local promoter, the race can be a great success. So they're saying that the Grand Prix CEO, John Casey, if they ever do this again, would not be involved, which wouldn't be a surprise. That's just as Casey said in his statement, the situation is untenable.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not going to be able to be rectified. So, you know, I think we'd all be skeptical, no matter what the situation is, of it ever happening again at Boston. But you never say never. You never say never. Meanwhile, NASCAR has next year's schedule out. This year's IndyCar schedule is not complete. Think of the irony of that. The 2017 schedule was announced today. We're talking about 2016.
It is 2016, isn't it?
It is 2016.
Just thought I'd check.
It is, as disappointing and frustrating as this has all been, and in some ways embarrassing, if they can somehow get this done and get a race at a place like Watkins Glen or Gateway, it's not going to be all bad.
No, but you can't.
Financially, it's not good for the series, but it's not all bad for your fan base.
You can't spin this any other way than this was a black eye.
It is.
Because if you can spin this one, you need to be on a political campaign.
You cannot spin it. It has not gone well, but it can you don't have the black mark. If you don't get this replaced, it's not only embarrassing. Embarrassing is one thing, but not having this event is impactful. It goes beyond embarrassing, and I think that's just as much of a factor. You can at least negate about half of that. That you can keep yourself in the public eye, you can have a television window, you can potentially have an event that your people are excited about.
And if no one shows up, relatively speaking, you can say that, well, we only had 4 months, but...
And we just wanted to have a TV event, we wanted to keep people busy, wanted to entertain our fan base. This was an event for our hardcore fans. We knew we weren't going to be able to grow the sport or create new fans out of this situation, so... And that's the advantage of a place like Watkins Glen, of a road course race, that you don't notice as much well attended. That's why I'm still more interested in somehow that coming together.
And it sounds to me like, and I was worried also about Mark Miles saying that they wanted to go, if they wanted to go to Gateway and throwing it together a race that really needs more time to develop. That's why I thought Watkins Glen could work if they threw mm-hmm. enough money at it.
Okay, used up our time, had more things I wanted to do. I don't think I got a single tweet in tonight, but I am going to go back and I'm going to cut and paste some things and haven't lost them. I'm even going to try to go back to some from the last week or so. They've had some good questions on there and get to those either tomorrow, depending on what breaks, and definitely Monday. I'm not sure we're planning on any guests on either one of those shows, so we are going to have some time to chat on those programs. Tomorrow night at 7 o'clock, all next week, leading up to the Angie's List Grand Prix. For those that are not hardcore fans, yes, there is another race in Indianapolis coming up on the road course a week from Saturday. I picked up my mini marathon gear today. I've still got 36 hours to decide whether. It's still a game time decision. It might have just been a $70 t-shirt. So we're going to see.
Good luck to you.
We'll decide tomorrow night whether we're doing that. We'll see you tomorrow night at 7. Hey, you know what's next? It's Donald Davidson. 317-239-1070. Call your questions on the history of the Indianapolis 500. It's coming up next. Podcast up in just a few minutes. The Indy 500 page at 1070thefan.com and also on the IndyCar mobile app. Thank you for joining us on 93.5 1070 The Fan.